This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The court and legislative decisions that determined Wisconsin's April election have been controversial, to say the very least. Despite the pandemic, the Supreme Courts, at both state and federal levels, offered no leniency to voters. It should be noted that both the court and legislature met and made these decisions virtually because of the dangers the pandemic presents. Some analysts say this was an attempt by both the legislature and the courts to depress the vote, and that it could be a preview of what will happen in November if the pandemic continues to rage. David Daly is a senior fellow at Fair Vote and the author of Unrigged: How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. He wrote about the fight over Wisconsin's April election in an article for Salon, and he joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the ramifications of this situation.
Wisconsin isn't the only state that had an election during this pandemic. How did this process play out in some different states around the country?
That's a great question. And I think what it goes to is the fact that this didn't have to happen in Wisconsin the way that it did. And the reasons why it did are just so closely tied up with partisanship and power. Other states around the nation were able to avoid this problem. Either they punted their primaries deeper into the spring, and they decided to hold them in June or in July. And there's a handful of other states that made the kinds of proactive changes that allowed voting to continue as usual. You had four states this year: Alaska, Hawaii, Wyoming, and Kansas, that turned their elections into largely vote-by-mail contests using ranked choice voting. So if there was still, you know, several Democratic presidential candidates in the field, you could go ahead and put your choices in order. You wouldn't have to worry if, you know, a candidate dropped out ahead of time. And all they had to do in those states was maybe extend absentee balloting by a week or so and add a handful of in-person collection centers. And they've been able to continue with those primaries largely as usual. You didn't have any of these horrible images we saw out of Wisconsin in the last week of, you know, citizens lined up with masks in wheelchairs. It's really startling, and it didn't need to be this way.
Yeah, of course, you know, I was not at a polling station, although many of my colleagues were, but I did drop off my mail-in ballot at a local library. And even there, there was a, you know, shorter, but a line of people wearing masks, pretty frustrated with this process. There was some real tension that you could feel. Was there anything that made Wisconsin's situation unique from these other states?
Yes, I think what made Wisconsin unique is that you also had this state Supreme Court race on the ballot on Tuesday. And clearly that race is very important to determining the balance of power in Wisconsin over the next decade. There are crucial cases that are going to come before this court, perhaps as soon as this year. There may be a ruling on whether the state is allowed to move forward with purging some 240,000 voters off the rolls in Wisconsin ahead of the 2020 election. 240,000 voters off the rolls in a state that Donald Trump carried by 22,000 votes in 2016 would have a major national impact. There is the very real chance that this court will have to weigh in on the next decade of state legislative and congressional maps once the next round of redistricting starts in 2021. So there were really important and behind-the-scenes reasons why Republicans in particular wanted to be able to move forward with this primary election on a day when it appeared that turnout would be lower in Milwaukee and in urban areas around the state.
Well, in urban areas that at least in the case of Wisconsin, tend to vote Democratic.
That's exactly right. I mean, whenever you have five of 180 precincts open in a city that largely votes overwhelmingly Democratic, it creates an advantage for the other side. You know, it bakes a partisan edge into the process. And, you know, again, that didn't have to be the case. I think what's also so unusual is the way that the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in here. The court, in a 5-4 decision that they described as narrow and technical, refused to allow, essentially they overturned a lower court order that extended the deadline for returning absentee ballots, which was crucial in this case because the state elections board was really overwhelmed by the number of requests for absentee ballots. They had 1.2 million requests, probably, you know, multiple of five times more than they've ever seen in previous races. And getting all of that out the door was a real logistical challenge. There are reports coming in even today of, you know, ballots just now arriving at people's homes after the election. So it forced voters, through no fault of their own, even if they had already applied for an absentee ballot, to make that choice between standing in line and risking their health and bringing home a horrific respiratory disease to their family, or casting their vote in an election that could be crucial for representation in the state of Wisconsin for the next decade. And the Supreme Court weighed in on the side of keeping this election going, really turning their backs on all of these voters in Wisconsin and forcing them into a decision that it's really horrific to imagine Americans having to make.
I think a lot of people on the ground here, at least voters who I've heard from, are frustrated by this situation. I've heard from plenty of people whose ballots did not arrive, some of whom could not go to the polls for a variety of reasons, including either being immunocompromised or having people in their home who were immunocompromised. If you're someone who was impacted by these rulings in this pretty significant way, do you have any recourse?
I think it is really difficult to see what that recourse is going to be in reality. There was a federal court that said it wanted to wait and see until after the election what impact all of these outstanding absentee ballots had. So I imagine that litigation will continue and will have a chance at that level. But that would ultimately end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. And if what we saw is that there are five justices who did not want to wrestle with this public health crisis at all and said that essentially a deadline is a deadline and forced Wisconsin voters into that choice between their health and their civic voice, it's hard to imagine that the court is going to go along with any changes. You have an outcome here that I think is going to be contested for a long time in Wisconsin, but it's also going to live with the state for a long time. The maps that are produced in 2021 are going to be the playing field for the state's politics for the next decade. We've seen the impact that those maps have had over the course of this decade as far as really baking in a dramatic edge for Republicans in state assembly races especially, and then the kinds of policy aims that they've been able to accomplish with that edge and sort of how it has withheld even big Democratic waves like the one in 2018. So this is a really important race, and it is deeply saddening to me that the U.S. Supreme Court would not come down on the side of voters in the middle of a pandemic.
The Supreme Court, I believe both at the national and at the state level met virtually, as did the legislature when they were required to go into session the Saturday before the election. Meanwhile, they ruled that voters in Wisconsin, many of them would have to physically go to the polls in order to exercise their rights. There is this feeling of vast class disparity inside of the state of Wisconsin. This is something that I've heard reiterated time and time again by people who are saying, so you get to meet virtually, but we have to go in person and risk our lives in order to exercise our rights. What does this say about the state of democracy in the state of Wisconsin?
I think it says something about the state of democracy in Wisconsin, but also in America. And what it says is frightening. I mean, it's a bitter, bitter irony that these courts met virtually and forced Wisconsin's to make that choice between their health and their vote. And I imagine that that is a choice that Wisconsin voters are not going to forget that they had to make. What I think is also going to be memorable is your Speaker of the Assembly, Representative Voss, addressing voters in a mask and full personal protective gear and assuring everybody pretty unconvincingly, considering what he was wearing, that it was all perfectly safe for voters to come out to the polls. I think that this is the kind of case that is going to live with us, because it's highly likely that similar cases involving absentee ballots will come before the nation and these courts in November of 2020. We don't know what the state of the nation will be. We don't know if this virus will come back in the fall in cooler weather. We don't know if there are a number of states and cities where it's simply not going to be healthy to vote in person, and where we're going to have to dramatically ramp up vote by mail if we want to have a free and fair election. So you're going to have strapped, underfunded, overwhelmed election boards all around the country trying to get absentee ballots out, especially to Democratic areas where it will be more difficult in cities for folks to congregate in person, just because there's more people. So the dangers will be higher of folks being packed into these lines. I think what we see here is a warning sign that the Supreme Court is going to come down on the side of narrow technical deadlines rather than the essential spirit that every vote must be counted, and that during a pandemic, we have to be extra careful to be certain that every vote can be heard in a fair way. And I don't have any confidence that the Supreme Court is going to back up those foundational rights that all Americans have. And what I fear is that even more than a warning sign about November's elections, what we just saw in Wisconsin this week was a dress rehearsal for the kind of voter suppression backed up by the U.S. Supreme Court that we may very well see in November of 2020.
We're looking at a situation here in Wisconsin where people have been asked to risk their health in order to exercise their rights. And we know that this will likely lead to more deaths. People aren't going to necessarily stand for people dying. Do you get any sense that people inside of the legislature, that people inside of the courts seem to understand the ramifications that these kinds of moves have had around the world?
I don't have that sense at all. I have no confidence that either Wisconsin's legislature understands that or that the U.S. Supreme Court understands this. I mean, if you go and look at the very short decision that the five conservative justices on the court issued in this case, that they issued unsigned, They barely mention the pandemic itself at all. They only bring it up, I believe, in the very last paragraph, I believe, and it's only to attempt to say that the wildly cynical decision that they were reaching was actually not that cynical of a decision. To insist that they were only making a narrow decision on a deadline and weren't, you know, sending voters off to the polls in the middle of a pandemic, which is exactly what they were doing. It's deeply shocking to me that in the middle of a public health crisis this large, that all of our public institutions could fail Wisconsinites to this level, that they would make them choose between death and voting. It's placing power and partisanship above health in a way that is so crude and so un-American that it ought to chill us all to the core. And it certainly does me.
I don't want to seem hyperbolic, but what happens in other countries where people's rights are subverted in this way is this is something that people revolt over. This is the fuel of revolutions. And people will only take so much. And it feels like these rulings are ultimately saying, we don't care that much if you are put in risk.
We are going down a very dangerous path. The legislature in Wisconsin is willing to go down that path because they've gerrymandered themselves into such safe, uncompetitive districts that they no longer have to worry about losing. They have gutted democracy at such a profound level that they are insulated from the voters no matter how many come out and choose the other side. In 2018, you saw 190,000 voters statewide prefer Democratic Assembly candidates, and what you ended up with was a 63-36 Republican edge. The lines that they drew behind those closed doors at the Michael Best Law Office in Madison have endured for this entire decade, and they have profoundly warped the state of representative democracy in Wisconsin to the extent that you can hardly even call it a representative democracy any longer. When you feel that insulated from the voters, you can do things like this. You can hold in-person elections during a pandemic and not care, because you can tell from the numbers of absentee ballots that have already been requested and returned, right, that suburban areas of the state and places that tend to vote Republican had already received their ballots in the mail and had probably gotten them back already, that you had the Democratic core of the state that was still planning to vote in person or had not yet returned ballots. And then you can make such a cynical decision as to not cancel an election or push off the date even when the state is under a stay-at-home order. The legislature does not have to care about anybody who is not already one of their supporters when they are representing districts in which they can't lose and elections fundamentally don't matter. And we are building this same unaccountability into federal courts that have less and less respect for voting rights than perhaps they have ever had. I mean, John Roberts came to Washington as a young person determined to hollow out the enforcement of the Voting Rights Act back in the 1980s, and he has really achieved that as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I mean, starting with Shelby County versus Holder, that really led to the decade of voter ID and various voter suppression efforts that have gone across, you know, much of the South in all of these states that had been under orders to, you know, prove that their voting changes were not racially discriminatory. They no longer have to do that. You look at the decisions on voter purges in the Ohio case, Husted versus a Philip Randolph Institute that creates this loophole that never existed before in the National Voter Registration Act. You look at the partisan and racial gerrymandering decisions that have essentially allowed politicians to use this sophisticated technology to draw themselves into seats that they cannot lose. And you have to wonder about the future of American democracy and how much longer we are willing to take this. But also, where are recourses going to come from? If the courts will not protect voting rights, and if huge majorities of Americans in states like Wisconsin cannot change their legislatures, where do we generate change from?
David Daly is a senior fellow at Fair Vote and the author of Unrigged: How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.